Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Stansberry Radio Network.
So I've got here with me Gabriel Weinberg, creator of DuckDuckGo, and I'm going to call it the biggest indie search engine in the world.
I'll take it.
So you have Google and Bing, but they like take your information, spy on it, manipulate it, sell it, do things with it. You do nothing with anybody's information, right?
That is right.
You don't even know who's like hitting you.
Our privacy policy in a nutshell is we do not collect or share personal information.
And you're getting like, are you allowed to say the number? How many?
Yeah, our traffic's actually public. It's at duckduckgo.com/traffic.
Okay.
Get about 11 million searches a day now.
So 330 million searches a month.
Yes.
And do you keep track of anything else? Like what do people search for?
So we keep track of searches completely anonymously to help with spelling and other things like that. But otherwise, no, we don't really know.
Like what's the most searched or item of the day?
We could theoretically figure that out, but we don't routinely look at that at all. Yeah.
And just in a nutshell, I want to get into your book, Traction, How Any Startup Can Achieve Explosive Customer Growth. But I'm going to ask you things about Traction you don't address in this book.
Good.
So,
some new questions.
I want to address your whole philosophy of what Traction is across life.
Yeah.
But just what the hell is the business model of DuckDuckGo?
So, it is a myth that you need to track people to make money in search. So, our business model looks like Google's business model, essentially, for the search part, which is if you search for car or mortgage or a book, you get a book or car or mortgage ad. And if you click on that, we get some money. What we're not doing is tailoring that ad to you specifically, which Google doesn't really do either on their search engine.
Really?
They do that outside their search engine. So like YouTube, Gmail, and all their ad networks that follow you around the internet, like that's where all that tracking is for. Like we just focus on web search, so we can just like serve you ads based on your keyword.
So are you cutting off like a whole area of your of potential money by not essentially creating kind of that AdSense style network that Google has?
We're certainly not in an advertising network. Yeah.
Right.
And that's a very lucrative business and we're not in it.
What about having DuckDuckGo be kind of, doing an enterprise to enterprise business, like making it this default search engine on various websites so you can kind of do that network approach?
We thought about it and we dabbled in it a little bit, but like the people don't convert back into regular search engine users. It just turns out like if you power like someone's
It's just BS.
Yeah, even their blog search or whatever, like it never translates back into actual search engine users.
Are you happy doing it? You've been doing this for like 7 years.
Yeah, I started companies right out of college. My last company, I sold in 2006. And after...
What was it? To who?
It was an early social networking company called Names Database, sold to classmates.com.
Is this N-A-Y-M-Z?
No.
Okay, what, how do you spell names? Just names?
Yeah, it was the most vanilla name you could think of for a company.
And classmates.com was public. It was United Online?
Yep, they had just bought Classmates a year earlier.
Okay, are they still around? I remember they were like...
They're still around.
They had like a ton of cash and they never really did anything with
it. Yeah, I know. Well, they thought they might become an internet conglomerate like IAC or something.
Uh-huh.
But in any case, the crux of that story is I was not interested in that business at all. Like the product, I wasn't a user. I'm not a social network user to begin with. I just kind of happened into that area. And so I decided whatever I started next, I wanted to be interested in for at least a decade. And I set out specifically to figure that out and tried like a bunch of different projects. and eventually settled upon DuckDuckGo. So the short answer is yes. That was a correct decision. I'm still happy. I can do this indefinitely.
Yeah, like you don't feel like the urge, for instance, to sell and move on to the next thing.
No.
Will you ever sell? What do you want to do?
You know, our like vision is to raise the standard of trust online, and you know, and our mission really is to be the world's most trusted search engine. And so to the extent that someone could help us do that better and faster, like we're not opposed to like joining forces with somebody, but we're not interested in like being sold and shut down, which is what happens with most acquisitions.
Do you think anyone's tried to do that? Like have Microsoft or Google tried to approach you and say, hey, you need to be shut down, just let us buy you?
We have been approached for acquisition offers and we've turned them down.
Okay. Yeah. Why do you think people approached you? Like they thought they could build you up further, or they wanted your revenues, or like what was their goal in approaching you?
You know, the scale in search is so vast. So like, you know, we're at 300 million searches a month. That's actually really tiny in the search market. And then we were at 30 million, though it's different. And so each one of those look similar to the outside. Well, that's a big number. But to the inside, those are very different types of companies for acquirers. So right now, our revenue is starting to become probably at the point where it's attractive enough where you wouldn't want to shut us down. Before then, it was probably more for technology and just like search expertise.
Because your technology, essentially you encrypt from end to end, you know, what you don't even know what people are searching. There's no way for you to track anything.
Yeah, so that's not that is all true, but that's not the cool part of our technology. Like our main focus is on instant answers product-wise. And so we took an open approach to instant answers, meaning that
What's instant answers?
Instant answers is that stuff at the top above the links you see that complete your search with zero clicks. So on Google, they call it Knowledge Box or One Box. Mm-hmm. You know, like Wikipedia article, if you search James Altucher, you'll get, you know, I don't know what your first sentence says about
well,
you now.
I think if you search me, you get why I shouldn't, how to most quickly die, things like that.
Well, in any case, there's often an instant answer at the top. And, you know, our vision is that, you know, there are thousands of sites now that have great answers for every topic. So like Lego parts or bioinformatics or municipal bonds or whatever it is, there's a great site out there that has a good answers for that. And there's no reason why you should click on links to get those answers. Like we should be able to put them above the links for you.
You should, you know, just like how Google seems to have almost a symbiotic relationship with Wikipedia. I mean, I think I read somewhere that one out of three Google searches results in someone going to Wikipedia. So Google becomes only the interface between the user and Wikipedia.
That's the crux of this whole idea. Yeah, exactly.
So you should do something with like Quora or somebody like that, because they have so many answers.
The Quora is one of the ones in our pipeline of indexing. Yeah, so we have 600 instant answer sources like that.
Okay,
now.
Good.
Like Quora and all these other ones like that are even less popular but very useful for people searching that niche. And it's all open source, meaning like anyone can come and suggest ideas or code them or whatever.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
So that's the technology we're actually focused on a lot day to day.
So what I want to talk about, I want to talk about how you got up to 300 million searches a month on DuckDuckGo, given that Google really is, you know, the king. So you're like the half breed prince or whatever. But also just so you wrote this book Traction, and it's all about how any startup can, you know, achieve the kind of growth you've achieved, like this explosive growth. But I kind of want to just explore just the word traction a little bit. What does that mean to you? Like, because it's obviously an important word. Like, you included it as a title, and I get this asked this question a lot. You know, like, how much traction do you need to keep going? Like, people don't have a way of measuring. So, A, people don't know how to grow something. But B, people don't know when to quit something.
Yep.
Like, when are they not getting enough traction? And I don't mean just in business. I mean kind of in relationships or a job. Or anything. Like, and I know you're obviously focused on the business. You've done hundreds of interviews for this book. You've talked to so many people I know, by the way. Like, I just, like, it's basically you took my list of all my people on my phone and talked to them all, except for me, by the way. But so what is traction to you?
So on the business side, I think of it as customer demand. And you can quantify it, but it's some level of customer demand. On the life side, I'd say the concept probably
But it's not just customer demand, because it has to be customer demand during a certain amount of time. Like, if I do a business for 4 years and I have no customer demand, that's different than if I do a business for 2 years and I have no customer demand.
So, yeah. So, I define it as growth, you know, growth and customer demand. But I think people would say that even a business that has no growth, I'm being more abstract now, would still say it has traction. I mean, like, even if you're kind of, if you're operating a business by yourself sustainably and year after year it's spinning off $1 million or something, I'd say most people would say that has traction. You know, maybe not in the investment side, like in
right, but that's like a lifestyle business.
Right, yeah, so, it's a lifestyle.
So it's a good.
I'm thinking broader to your point.
But I think it's traction in the sense that, oh, they've achieved a degree of freedom where they've set up something sustainable that will sustain them and all their dreams and interests while they, you know, maybe they can have traction in other areas of life knowing that.
But that sustainability is because they have customer demand, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily growing in that case.
It's not necessarily
so you
growing.
You don't associate traction with growing. But what I'm saying is...
I do. For, okay. In a business context.
Yeah.
I'm saying if you're going to extrapolate beyond business to lifestyle businesses or to your life, you know, I think it's probably related to just generally customer demand. Like, there's some interest out there in what you're doing.
Because
it's
funny. A lot of people come to me with an idea and say, I have this idea. How do I get funding? And that's kind of like almost the wrong way to approach it. Like, I think customer demand is the most important thing, because that's how you value, like, profits are the purifier of a business. So when you have customer demand, which is the first thing you need before profits, you at least know that there's some interest in your, you at least know your idea might be good to some group of people.
Yeah, exactly. To your point about when to quit or not, you know, I tell people, are there bright spots in what you're doing? Can you identify anyone out there who actually loves what you're doing, even if it's like three people? Because
right,
then you can dig into them and say, okay, are these outlier people? Are they just like crazy weirdos? Or like, are they like maybe constitute some kind of group that you can build upon?
But like, one time, this is a long time ago, I started a dating website and it got some signups. But like right away, I got this really awful sense that there was just zero traction there. Even though I had signups, it wasn't like...
Signups isn't real demand.
Right, signups is not demand.
Yeah. Customer demand is, they're demanding your product. They're like coming to you every day and saying, I want to use this.
Right, and it's funny because the flip side is, one time I started another business, stockpicker.com, and people were coming to me and saying, hey, can you block me from the service because we're spending too much time on it.
That's demand.
So that was demand. So I felt it then.
Yeah, exactly.
So you kind of feel demand.
Yeah, and okay, so right.
Like, what happened in the beginning stages of DuckDuckGo? Were you like, oh my god, like people were writing you like, oh my gosh, you're gonna bring down Google, or what was happening to your kind of core evangelists?
DuckDuckGo, when it started, was not something you would want to switch to. Like, it was not ready. But I soft launched it to Hacker News, if you're familiar with that site.
Yes.
And
they blocked me. It's true. I don't know why. F you.
You must have said something. Anyway, there was immediate obvious interest in some kind of differentiator competitor. Like, people were clearly, there was some amount of people who were like, Google's too much of a monopoly and I want like another provider.
Is that like quirky conspiracy theorists though? Like, oh, Google's tracking my every move. The FBI knows what I'm doing.
At the beginning, we weren't totally private. So it wasn't privacy reaction. It was more just people want, there's a thirst of early adopters just in the world who want to try new things. And it was clear, like, search was so big, like they were tired of Google not innovating and they wanted something new. Now, we didn't have anything interesting at the time, but you could tell that there was demand there. And that's what motivated me initially.
So the fact that there was some excited users looking for an alternative. I mean, why did you think... And again, I want to get to the book and overall just attraction, but now I'm curious, why did you think, like, this is year 15 of search engines, why did you think in that year you could come up with something new? Because nobody really has come up with anything new in a long time. I don't know what the next search engine after Google was, other than Bing.
Yeah, there were a bunch in the mid-2000s who tried some things that just didn't get anywhere.
Like who?
Search Me did this CoverFlow thing, and there was Kuhl and Hikea, and
I guess Mahalo.
Mahalo is another one. Yeah, there were about five that raised like $50 million. They all kind of crashed and burned. And then Blecko was another one. And so this actually started out of complete personal interest. So this was 2007. I was being frustrated by my own Google results, and that's how this grew up. And I was frustrated in basically three ways. And I started side projects on all of them. None of them were privacy at the beginning because it wasn't on my mind. One was more instant answers. Like, there weren't instant answers on Google yet. And like you said, everyone's going to Wikipedia. That was one. The second was there was a lot of spam on Google then. I don't know if you remember back then. But like...
Yeah, not so much now, though.
Not now. They cleaned it up in 2010. But like 2007, 2010, like tons of content farms, just like tons of links where you just go nowhere but ads. I wanted to clean that up. And then third, to your core point, I thought there were lots of people who had better links in their head for certain things. Like, I went to... The genesis of that was... I signed up with a stained glass class with my wife, and they handed out this like sheet of paper that was like, here are all the best stained glass links that you should go to, like some early blogs and stuff. And they weren't the links when you typed in stained glass on Google, and they were better, like demonstrably better. Hmm. And so I was like, oh, if you, all these things could be interesting projects to like augment Google. And then I was like, after a year, I was like, oh, you know, you could put some of these together and make your own search engine.
But like, Google spent so many years now, and like, they have like entire farms of computers with
yes,
data on it.
They do.
Like, how do you just technically, how did you kind of rise up to have to compete with their results?
Well, I
just, I don't want this to be, I'm sorry to asking two technical questions.
Like, oh, yeah, I don't care.
Because they have such a head start.
Yeah, so my thesis became that, you know, looking at Bing, and Yahoo was still indexing at the time, and Yandex, which is a Russian search engine, was starting to index in the U.S. If you actually ran tests and Bing ran some, if you took, like, Google's results and Bing results and you replaced the logos, people actually perceive the relevancy about the same.
Really?
Yeah. And so, like, the links themselves and the ranking kind of had reached diminishing returns. And so my argument was... You know, that's essentially then kind of a commodity. And if I could get that from Yahoo or Bing or somebody else and focus on like value ads, then I could actually really add value.
So you kind of take their, I don't know if they have an API for it, but you take their feed
yep.
and then kind of augment it.
Yeah, exactly. And so then if you actually think about instant answers on top of results, people click on links in like a power law fashion. So they click on the first link. So if you put stuff above the links, like instant answers, even if you only do that for some percentage of the time, you're transforming the experience dramatically because that's what people click on most.
And what if Google and Bing decide to not let you use their feed? Like, they just arbitrarily decide to hate you?
Yeah, that is a real risk. That risk has become less over time as our revenue has increased and we become useful to these companies, you know, in a material way.
Yeah.
And more to the point for Bing and Yahoo, like, We're like the only search engine that's really gotten people to switch from Google, like not from distribution deals or anything. So we're not really competitive with Bing and Yahoo in that sense. Like, we're taking share directly from Google. So it's like a win-win across the ecosystem.
I see. So they want you around.
Yeah.
Yeah. So worst comes to worst, because they offer a commodity, you don't care which one you're getting data from. And it's not going to be the case that everyone colludes to hate you. Because someone's going to like
it. We hope not. Yeah.
So no, but that's reasonable. So, okay. So traction again. So let's say, I'm just going to ask like a random question.
Yeah.
Let's say you're in a relationship for 6 months, 12 months, 3 years, and the man or the woman is unsure. When do you decide there's no traction in this relationship?
Wow. That one, I don't know if I'm qualified to answer.
No, but your whole book is about business, and we'll get to that. But I just want to kind of explore what you think of the word traction in general.
Yeah.
Like, when does something feel burn out and if it's not moving?
So the way I define it in the book and what I kind of believe in terms of probably relationships too is traction is growth. And so if things aren't growing, you don't have traction in a business sense. Like, you can't raise money. You can't do that. I kind of believe that way in relationships as well. I've been with, you know, I met my wife in college when I was 20, and so I'm 36 now. We've been together 16.
Oh, so you've been with her for 16 years.
Yeah.
How fast did you get married?
2004, so 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah. We've been married like 10 years.
Yeah.
But we're totally different people than we were. I mean, personality-wise, we're similar, but like...
Given that you've grown differently, how do you know how do you keep traction going in the relationship?
Yeah, right. That's kind of what I'm getting at, as I think, like, we grew together, you know? And I don't know if you can do that always, but, like, that to me seems key to traction.
So you've been lucky.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure it requires a bit of skill, too.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You could get into like how we did that. I have no counterfactual, so I have no idea outside us But like communication seems to be key. I mean, she's my best friend. It's like that's probably helps a lot.
That's right? Great. A lot of people listening to this really hate you right now. So okay, traction on business, because everybody starts a business. They want to sell something, you know, new oven gloves or whatever. And then the whole question is, how do they, you know, get an audience, get people to buy their product, and get people to spread the word on their product? And I have some thoughts on this as well. And I agree with a lot of things you say in the book, because I've noticed with this with my own businesses. But how about we kind of go through these things one at a time, and you talk about them. And since you literally talk to every single friend I have, I'm able to add in a little bit about what I know of their stories. So okay, the first thing you say, which I really agree with, is targeting blogs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so backing up, like, just a bit, I think there's two overriding things people totally mess up. Is one, they don't start traction early enough. They kind of, your premise is that they have an idea, now they're going out, they built the product, now they're going to get traction.
Well, actually, I'm not going to say that's the premise, okay. Because I think you can actually build your own, you can make yourself a trustworthy source before you have a product.
Exactly. That would be the ideal way to do it, mm-hmm. I think. Like, starting to get traction right from the beginning, which is, you know, you can even build an audience first. Like, essentially, you have, and then think about talking to your audience about what they want.
For instance, you could have written, before you even started DuckDuckGo, you could have written a nonstop blog about all the problems of the current search engines. So, yes. And then you build yourself up as a trustworthy source in the kind of esoteric end of the search engine, you know, community. And then when you start something, people know who you are and they start visiting it.
Yes, and the reason for that, the reason for that is, people think that they know what to build, and it turns out that almost every product that launches is totally not sticky and has a leaky bucket. And people can prevent that if they constantly talk to new, fresh customers about the product they're building.
Right.
And people hardly ever do that. They often get a beta list of customers, and even those people aren't fresh after the first time, you know, they saw the product. And so I think it's important to, like, get that fresh customers right from the beginning. Now, targeting blogs, back to your point, is like an excellent way to do that, because you can be blogging yourself or you can be targeting other blogs, like, before you launch the product and be talking about what you're going to be doing and getting fresh people on it all the time.
I think there's a subtlety here too, which is that, and this kind of came up in my discussion with Ev Williams, is that when you target blogs, you're really targeting destination sites. You're targeting where the people are. And you're not trying to create your own blog that's a destination site. And I think that's a mistake people make often. They sort of create their own blog hoping that people come to it. But the reality is, people are at, let's say, TechCrunch in the technology community, or they're at LinkedIn in the career community, or like you launched your blog on, you launched your search engine on Hacker News, which is sort of the hacker community. You didn't try to drive people to your own destination site. You went to where the people are. And I think that's an important subtlety to recognize.
Yeah, there's a meta point there, which is, if you run traction tests right from the beginning, which is what we suggest in the book, and you actually don't know which niche to focus on initially. Like, almost all products launch, they need to pick a niche to focus on. But if you're targeting blogs, that's the other reason why it's a great thing to do at the beginning. You can actually test different niches by targeting different audience types. Because ultimately, when you're marketing, you're basically thinking, okay, who is my target audience? Where do they hang out? They may hang out online, they may hang out offline, and you're going to places where they are, is essentially what you're saying. But at the beginning, you don't even know which audience you should target.
Right, so hit everything.
Yeah, hit
so
a, hit
it's
a
like
bunch
the
of
wall
things.
Of sound approach.
Yeah, and you can do that. You can do that in a number of ways. You could do that using Facebook ads, you know, and test different cohorts, or you can do it on Twitter. There's a bunch of places you can do to try to target different niches. But ultimately, when you launch, you want to know, you know, what niche to focus on, what marketing message actually resonates, and then what channel to use.
And I wanna just hit one point there, like Facebook ads. People are like, oh, I can't afford advertising. But Facebook ads, you can get like a statistically significant result with just like $5 per
yes.
campaign. So for instance, I could hit, you know, women who love to cook or men who love basketball, and I could see which audience performs better for just $10.
Yes, exactly. So, and you want to validate those hunches, because my point of doing this right away is that that might change what you do to your product before you launch. Like,
right.
If you decide, wow, yeah, men who like basketball are really my target audience, or that's like the initial niche, you might change your product a bit certainly the messaging around
like a basketball logo.
Yeah, exactly. theme it up.
Now, the next one, I'm not so sure I agree with it because I've seen so many bad examples of it. You say publicity.
Yeah.
Now, publicity is good, obviously. All news is good news sort of thing. But I feel like the average like article written somewhere, just unless it's like on one of these destination sites, just doesn't really get you anything.
Right. So backing up one more time, the premise of the book essentially is, you know, there are a universe of ways you can get traction. Mm-hmm. So like we identify 19. And from all the interviews and research we did, we found that companies, different types of companies, consumer business, you know, bakeries, whatever, in all stages used all of these to get traction. Like there were companies like that was their main channel.
So all companies used all of these.
Yeah.
To some extent, varying extents.
Well, not each one used all of them, but like we found companies, people will ask me like the number one question I get is, okay, I'm a consumer internet company. Which one do I use? And I'm saying that's the wrong question. Because the right question is, how can I be creative? You almost want to go where people aren't. Like, if everyone in your industry is using X, you want to use Y. And what we try to do is identify the universe of them and say, you should take all of them seriously.
Well, and you mentioned in the book, you talked to Peter Thiel, who says, you know, you're going to find one of these things.
Yeah, right. You just need to find one. And it's unclear which one it is. So you have to do this testing. So publicity in particular, I generally agree with you, but DuckDuckGo has had one of our waves of growth on publicity.
Well, because you have that interesting story, which is kind of like you have two great stories, which is the David versus Goliath story and the privacy versus Google takes all your information story. So you're always good for a story.
Right, exactly. And so that doesn't work for all products.
Right.
Most products, I think your point is, don't have a good story.
Right.
So they're not going to get good conversions or good press stories scalably.
Unless, and that's why I like the targeting blog so much. Like you again, you could have gotten in there and say, here's the problems I'm seeing with search engines. And then you could have seen what, you could have gone to the destination sites, written this stuff, and then seen what the audience was responding to. And that would help you define what your product would be.
Yes. There's also a sense of, you know, at the beginning, you do stuff that doesn't scale, right? And so this gets to your point, to the point of what is your goal? What is your traction goal? Which is what I think you should identify first. When you're starting out, your traction goal is usually small. Like you're just trying to get the first 100 customers or whatever. And then targeting blogs is really useful. When you reach bigger scales, like us at 300 million searches a month, you have to focus on things that can move the needle at your scale. And then things like publicity, mass publicity, actually matter a lot more. Whereas if you're starting out, you're not going to try to manufacture like international press.
Right, right. So the next one, which is sort of related though, is unconventional PR. And I've made use of this in various ways. Like when I was selling, this is not really a business, but when I was selling the book Choose Yourself, I released it in a month in advance of the official release, Bitcoin only. So I was able to kind of do something a little quirky and go on CNBC, and just because I did, it's like,
yeah,
it's
a perfect example. Did it work?
Well, it's funny. On CNBC, they actually asked, did you just do this for marketing purposes? And I said, well, I am on national TV right now, so what do you think? So it did work a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unconventional PR can be great mm-hmm. for launches, but it hinges on creativity.
Yeah, you have to.
And you
talk to Ryan Holiday a lot in this book. And, you know, one thing, so Ryan Holiday and I kind of conceived that strategy. That's just the coincidence here. And, you know, Ryan and I started brainstorming maybe 6 months before the book release to come up with like at least three different unconventional PR attitudes, including me approaches, including me running for Congress, which became a whole thing. But
you did not go through with that.
No, I started and then I stopped, and then the unconventional PR became why I stopped. So I'm really curious about this next one because I always am skeptical of people who approach on. So you mentioned search engine marketing is the next one, and I always think the targeted blogs approach is so much better than search engine marketing, but I could be wrong.
You know, again, like I don't want to say one is totally better than the other because it applies in different situations.
Right.
I think targeting blogs is more universal at the first stage. Like it's really easy to do. What's nice about search engine marketing is you can really test conversions at a small scale with very little effort. Like you can bring it up in the next 10 minutes and have people go into your website.
And let me ask you a naive question. Like, what is search engine marketing? Like, is it buying keywords?
Buying keywords.
That's it? Or is it kind of constructing your site correctly?
I separate those out. Search engine optimization being the other one.
Okay.
SEO. Search engine marketing is just buying ads.
But like always the obvious ads are going to be, always the obvious words are going to be too expensive.
Yeah, this is generally why it's not great for startups. Like you have to go really long tail with it or be in an area that doesn't have a lot of search engine ads, like a new industry.
Okay. Yeah.
But if you're going up, if you're starting a new insurance company, that's not going to be the channel for you.
Right.
You're going to pay like $100 a click. It's going to be ridiculous. You can't learn from that.
And are customers you get that way usually good customers? Because they don't know about you. They don't know if you're a trustworthy source. They just see that you're like first in line.
It really depends. Search engine ads can make great customers because the people are literally searching for that thing. So it depends what they're searching for, like you said, how trustworthy they might be the source. But if you're actually searching for a solution and you see something that solves your problem, it's like, it can be great.
So like if I search like bakeries, Montclair, New Jersey, if I'm the bakery, I want to be number one on that. So it's worth it for me to buy that set of keywords.
Yeah. I mean, DuckDuckGo initially got users through SEO and search engine marketing, like people searching for Google alternatives on Google.
That's interesting.
Or new search engine on Google.
Who searches for Google alternatives?
People do.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I guess there's a big enough population of anything that you're always going to get the long tail. And then you have social and display ads, which we talked about with like Facebook. But do you think display ads work? Display ads being like a banner.
Yeah. I mean, it depends. It works in some industries. But social ads, go beyond Facebook now. Like Reddit, obviously, is a huge site you can put ads on. But now there are like even more niche sites you can do that on. So it's becoming the case that like almost in each category, there's like a big site that you could probably get. Some either a social ad or a banner ad on. So a banner ad regularly might not work, but if you put it on a car parts forum and you're selling car parts, then it might work pretty well.
Right. Okay. Next one, offline ads, which I really feel never work, but you might disagree. I remember one time I was talking to a guy who used to run VH1. I don't even know if VH1 exists anymore, but it was like the TV music channel.
Yeah.
And he was running a TV network and selling ads, and he said he would never buy an ad on TV.
Yeah. I know of a bunch of startups that have done well through TV ads. And then I'm also including...
Outside of infomercials and direct response?
Yeah, outside. Well, they're direct response, mm-hmm. But they're not infomercials.
Okay.
And then, I'm including radio ads as in offline ads here, which you could expand to podcast ads.
Yeah.
And I think they work.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a bunch of startups that have grown a ton through podcasts and radio ads in the last few years.
Yeah, it's not that expensive, I guess.
Podcast ads have now gotten pretty expensive.
Yeah.
You tell me.
I guess it's about $40 or $50 CPM.
Yeah, that's really high.
Yeah.
Comparatively. But, a lot of the kind of unicorn companies in the, Constant Contact and Blue Apron and all that kind of stuff, Nature Box, they're all advertising all over podcasts now.
Yeah. A company called Me Undies sponsors my podcast with Stephen Dubner, Question of the Day. So you get everybody on there. Okay, yeah, you mentioned search engine optimization. Here's a question for you. Just because you know so much about search engine marketing and search engine optimization, obviously, and you keep track of all the Google algorithms, I'm sure you personally do and your team certainly does. Why don't you start almost as like a separate or side source of revenue, an agency helping people or a product helping people with this stuff? So for instance, a site can run through your machine and see if it's perfectly search engine optimized, and they can throw in their keywords, and you can start doing the A/B testing for them.
Yeah. Blecko did do some of that, another mm-hmm. search engine that kind of recently got acquired.
Who acquired them?
IBM Watson.
God, who's acquiring these other search engines? Like, what do they use it for?
It was more a technology acquisition. Uh-huh. They were, I think, putting some of their crawling data, be my speculation, into Watson.
Okay.
To answer your question, though, it's all focus. I mean, and distraction. The same reason, like, we have no interest in kind of making more revenue by selling our own ads. We're just focused on making the search product better. And that is, in and of itself, a hard enough problem.
Yeah. No, I believe it. content marketing, which is related to targeting blogs.
You do that a lot.
Yes. No, that works extraordinarily well. So, for instance, just for building up an email list, I'll make a special report, give the special report away for free if you sign up for my email list. So that's a classic example.
Yeah, a lot of these are like, you know, my overriding message is the underutilized channel, certainly in your industry or just generally, is probably the best one for you because it's just more greenfield, higher conversions.
What do you mean by underutilized channel?
So, like, if everyone in your industry does radio ads and no one is doing offline events and you do offline events, there's like pent-up demand for that potentially. And as a result, you get higher conversions.
So you gave an example of another friend of mine, Dan Martell, Clarity.fm, where he uses speaking gigs, which could be considered like offline events,
yep,
to drive traffic to Clarity.fm, which is an excellent site for people to ask questions and answers to experts, and the experts get to charge per minute.
It's really because it's underutilized because other firms aren't using it. But the reason why that's important is people don't expect you to be advertising there, and then all of a sudden people pay attention. Like, all these things are related to, we call in the book, Andrew Chen coined the law of shitty click-throughs.
Oh, yeah, like, I like that.
Every marketing effort eventually results in shitty click-throughs. That's just because it becomes saturated and everyone's doing it.
Right.
So you want to do things that people aren't doing.
How do you find, like, the next, like, for instance, you started big, or no, you mentioned the example of Zynga, which started big using Facebook ads when before, like, they were the first Facebook advertiser, basically. And I remember at one point, they were like 30% of all Facebook ads was Zynga, or at least some 30% of Facebook's revenues came from Zynga in some form or other. So how do you find, though, the next big thing that's moving up fast to start advertising on, and even though it's not caught up yet in terms of revenues for themselves?
So I think pursuing traction in general is testing, and it's really testing in two phases. You know, the framework we outline is the first phase is you're basically testing different channels here that we're going through to figure out which channel could work for you, like which is generally going to work and is underutilized. Once you pick it, then it's testing within it, you know, new strategies and new tactics. So say like you determine social ads is like the way to go. Now you're focusing on social ads. It's your, you know, it's your job to become the expert at that. And so you need to be on the cutting edge of what is the new Facebook tactic, be it video or, you know, or going to Reddit or whatever it is. And the only way you really do that is by having your ear to the ground, going to talk to people, you running your own tests. That's why it's a full-time job of spending time on traction. And we say you should spend half your time pursuing traction on the early stages.
Like what sites do you like right now for social ads?
So we're at I'm a little disconnected from the early stages.
Because you're kind of growing organically now. People know who you are.
No, we're in this process of running tests, and we're still focused on Reddit, which is why I keep mentioning them. I think they're totally underutilized. But there's a lot of new ones, you know, like Pinterest. People are still doing stuff on that. You know, and all these new messaging apps, they all have new platforms.
And you can advertise, can you advertise on like Telegram or Snapchat or?
I don't think you can advertise on Snapchat now, but it costs a ridiculous amount. Mm-hmm. But like Telegram and Kick and all these kind of like local messaging things, they all are getting new platforms where you can like make apps and bots for them and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing there's opportunity there.
Has anybody created kind of like an app advertising network so I can go across all apps? Because it's hard for me to find like the right app to advertise.
Google has AdMob, mm-hmm, which they had bought, which kind of does that. But those have really upped in price recently as well, because a lot of the social games are just completely overspending there.
Right.
They're like everywhere is social game stuff. Hmm.
So next one, which I'm a big believer in, I actually think this is my favorite, is email marketing.
Yeah. I mean, it is the most personal.
Like all these things are kind of related, but like how you build your email list is related to content marketing.
Yeah, I think about it that any major growth phase of a startup usually has a core channel strategy. So it's one of these 19. And then if it's sophisticated strategy, other things are feeding into it, but they're not totally different. So like people who are focused on email marketing, they do content marketing to build their email list. But there are other people who just focus on content marketing, and email marketing is kind of more of a sideshow, and they're really focused on the viral spread of their content.
I think because people are afraid to start from zero. Like, email lists start at zero.
Yeah, I think both of those, that's why they're underutilized.
Yeah.
And content, too, is like, people are, it takes a while to build an audience. I mean, you talk about this a lot, but like, you don't have it from day one.
Right, it takes years.
And so, like,
people, unless your first thing is viral, but that
people
never
give up, you know, like, yeah, it hardly ever happens. And at the very minimum, it takes 6 months to see any really useful results.
Yeah, like almost every YouTuber I've spoken to, it was like on video number 50 before they finally kind of had their tipping point. And it, you know, to make a 3-minute quality video takes, you know, days or weeks of work. So imagine doing 50 of them
into a vacuum, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, like Michelle Phan, who's one of the biggest YouTubers out there, was on her 54th video that she finally hit her tipping point.
But because of that, it's become totally underutilized still.
Yeah.
And you just have to, like, believe in what you're doing, essentially. But you can...
And you have to be really beautiful.
Yeah. So we can't make YouTube videos.
Right. That's why we're doing a podcast. Yeah. So next one is, but email marketing, though, I think is huge, because those are people who have already signed up to see your content, and now you're a trustworthy source. They've already raised their hand and said, this person's a trustworthy source. So if you say, hey, I'm buying this or I'm making this, would you, you know, what would you pay for it, or would you pay for this? They're your first customers. They're your early adopters, and you're talking directly to them.
Yeah. And for each of these, you know, we recommend essentially testing a few at a time, very cheaply and fastly, so like less than $1,000, less than a month of time, to validate whether this channel could be useful to you.
Right.
And so we offer some suggestions for that. The point is, like, you can test each of these without going all in, you know?
Well, which brings me to the question of, why did you, like, given that you're very focused on your business, why did you write this book? Like, writing a book is very hard.
Good question.
But was this a marketing tool for you to kind of establish yourself as a source? That's why I asked if you almost want to set up separate business or a separate revenue source.
Yeah, no, it's not. I mean, and to be honest, DuckDuckGo is way beyond a scale where this would help DuckDuckGo at all. Like,
right, because the average book doesn't sell 300 million.
Yeah, you know, we can have, you know, like, just to put a point on that, we can have like a front page New York Times story now, and it doesn't really move our numbers that much.
Right,
which is really unfortunate, but it's just the reality. No, I really wrote this because I thought it's a missing part of the business literature. I thought it was filling a need.
So you wanted to join the conversation. This was just a personal thing. You wanted to join the conversation of how marketing occurs, and you've seen it occur just in your own efforts at DuckDuckGo, going from 0 to 100 to 10 million searches a day or a month to now 300 million searches a month.
Yeah, well, I mean, more personally, I started DuckDuckGo, and I tried to do the same thing I did in my last business, and it didn't work, and I didn't get any traction with DuckDuckGo initially. And I went out to see if there was a book like this, and I couldn't find it.
So you didn't get any traction. Like, you were stuck at, like, I don't know, 100,000 searches a day or, yeah, a month or whatever.
Exactly. And then I looked for a framework to apply, and I couldn't find one. And I started interviewing people. And then I also started angel investing, and everyone struggled with the same problem, you know?
Right.
And they had no great framework to apply. So that's why I wrote it.
Yeah, that's interesting. So now you've explored all of these. So now viral marketing... This is...
That's how my last business grew.
But this is a crazy one, because... Not crazy in a bad way, but, like, you can't predict. Like, how do you make something viral? You can't do it.
Well, I did, but it's
persistence,
very...
Persistence, I guess,
it's very rare, yeah. I mean, it has to be built into the product, basically.
Like what?
To be, like, an invite flow where you're inviting your users or to use the product, you know, like, it's a social thing in some way. This is to get truly viral, which is exponential growth.
Well, this reminds me a little bit of...
One user bringing in more than one user.
So it reminds me a little bit of... And you talked to Noah Kagan quite a bit for this book. Noah Kagan's got this product, King Sumo. Have you ever used that?
Yes.
So you basically... It's a contest, but if someone can enter it, but then they get a link back in return, and when they share that link and other people enter using that link, they get... The original person gets, like, 5 more entrants into the contest.
Yes.
So
to get truly viral, you need to do something like that. And I did this for 3 years of my life. It is extremely time consuming to maintain that process, because it's an exponential process, meaning that you get exponential growth, but you can also get exponential decay if anything goes wrong with the process.
Like what?
Like your email deliverability somehow drops by like 5%.
Or if people just not interested in the product, but they're interested in the gifts at the end.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So that's getting it started. I'm saying, even if you reach the promised land and you make a viral loop that is exponential, now you have to maintain that loop at all costs. And like any little thing that leaks out of your funnel, because things change over time, like dampens your loop and you're no longer viral.
Well, and it's interesting. Look at musicians who have broken through with viral videos. Like, I don't know how to say his name, Psy, P-S-Y, who had that Gangnam Style.
Yeah, I have no idea either.
he had that one video, and then I never really had a video again, as far as I know.
Yeah, there's been a few, like OK Go.
I don't know that one actually.
Yeah, they're pretty good, and you know, Katy Perry, obviously, and there's been a few who've been able to replicate it, but it's very difficult. I mean, they that's their whole effort.
Right. So it's to create viral marketing stuff. But how did you make DuckDuckGo? How did you make use of viral marketing for DuckDuckGo?
I did not. That's my problem. I tried to use that in SEO, which is where my last business, you know, what channels it used, and it just topped out.
I have an idea for you.
Yeah.
How about you by open source for DuckDuckGo, inviting other people to, you know, do it in that kind of GNU style way.
Yeah.
So where any changes they make,
copy left. Yeah.
You can incorporate back into DuckDuckGo, and since you're the one with the name brand, you'll benefit the most by open sourcing all your code, and then it's kind of viral. The first search engine to like open source their code, unless Google's done it, but I don't think they have.
No, they haven't. Our instant answer platform is open source. One viral thing we tried, we got really high quality T-shirts, and we basically measured and said if we give a T-shirt to the hands of a DuckDuckGo fan, they actually end up spreading it to three people.
It's an ad impression when everyone looks at them.
Yeah, people actually ask about it because the logo is kind of interesting, and they end up converting mainly their friends and family. But like, why do you keep wearing that T-shirt?
But like you said, though, like even that, like with 300 million searches a month, it's going to be hard to move the needle on
T-shirts.
That's
the problem. Yeah, we could get the numbers to work to more like a billion searches a year additive, but now we're at where we need to move more like 3-4 billion. And it just doesn't add up anymore.
What if you find kind of the top YouTube videos that are, their channels are experiencing kind of exponential growth, but still the numbers are small?
Yeah.
You know, so 248 is exponential growth, but nobody notices it yet. Why don't you find them and then start sponsoring their channels?
That is an interesting strategy.
Right, just helping out. Business development. So this is kind of like how Google originally had to deal with Yahoo, and they had to deal with AOL, where they were the official search engines on Yahoo and AOL, and that was a large part of their initial growth,
yeah.
Particularly their deal with Yahoo in the very beginning, until Yahoo realized, oh no, we've created a monster.
That's so right. And it was the last stage of our growth, too. So we have a deal with Apple and a deal with Firefox, so we're an option in Safari and Firefox.
Okay, are you still you're just an option, or are you the main default?
We're an option. Main default would be awesome.
Right, but those guys pay. Like, Google pays Firefox probably some enormous amount of money.
Yeah, recently Yahoo started paying Firefox. That was a big deal. They switched, but it's like hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right, so that's not going to happen.
It's out of our price range.
So what other business development you can do? You can do, like, again, like blogs or Twitter or...
Anything with
know.
Massive distribution, it's hard now to move that number that we have. You know, there are a bunch of the traditional deals outside the browsers are operating systems and, you know, phones, like be an app that's default installed or on the desktop, be like, you know, how Internet Explorer used to come with Windows, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't have an idea for you there. Because your big challenge is when you reach a certain level of traction is moving that needle.
Yeah.
So how do you, you know, it's almost like you kind of have to at some point throw your hands up and say, okay, it's either organic or nothing now.
Yeah, and we have organic growth. We're just not satisfied with it. Like, we want to grow faster. We want to get the message out further.
Well, how big is the search engine market altogether? Like, how many searches a month?
It's a little unclear, but we're on the order of, you know, a little less than 1%, something like that. So,
what about moving to you know, other countries? Like, I imagine most of your growth is U.S. What about like doing the same model in China, for instance?
We're about half non-U.S. now.
Okay.
But we're zero China because we're blocked.
Oh, you're blocked.
Yeah.
Why don't you just? I'm just saying hypothetically. I'm not making a political statement. Why don't you get yourself unblocked so then you at least beat Google and China?
It's a political thing. I mean, to be unblocked, we would have to violate our core privacy policy.
Okay. I see. Because China wants to know who everybody is.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Have you had any discussions with them?
No. I mean, essentially, to do anything unblocked in China, you have to have a presence there. And you have to have servers there to abide by their filtering rules. So we just give up instantly.
Yeah, not worth it.
Yeah.
Okay, so affiliate programs are kind of critical in any sort of information product industry. I don't see it critical in your industry at all, but we'll describe what an affiliate program is.
Yeah, this is where...
Because I think, by the way, this is the way you do generate sales for most people, like lots and lots of sales.
Yeah, I mean, this is any time, you know, you basically hire someone to sell your product and then give them a cut.
Right, but you set up, but you can set up a platform so that essentially multiple affiliates, like many affiliates, can sign up and everybody gets the standard deal. You can also A/B test different offers.
Have you ever done that with your books?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah,
huge, and that's actually been the largest source of selling books.
Yeah, it's great with information products.
In fact, I think this is why traditional publishers or traditional everything lose out to.
So how did you set those up?
I basically worked with people who helped me on who knew lots of affiliates, and then I would write extra material so that, and I would bundle it together. So buy my book, plus you get these four other reports, or you get some other book from a long time
e-book
ago for
kind
free.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah. And you get it free, and then you charge whatever you want, or you A/B test what you could charge, and you get on lists of like 100,000 people or more, and you know you have trustworthy sources recommending you, and bam, it's huge.
Yeah. It is great. Another area where it's often used is any kind of really high value product that like has lead gen. So like insurance is a big one.
Yeah, no, insurance is huge. I have one friend who literally makes a living. Like he has a travel blog, but he makes a living by he very honestly recommends why everyone should get travel insurance, but then the travel insurance companies pay him a lot of money on affiliate fees.
Yeah, you can get like up to $100 plus, you know, per sign up on those things.
So I think the interesting thing to note there is it's not only is it a great business selling your product through affiliate programs, it's actually a great business being an affiliate.
Yeah.
So the affiliates make most of the money. In any deal I've done, by the way, affiliates make like 80% of the money.
Yeah,
so,
especially on information stuff where the margin is super high.
Yeah. So that affiliates clean up because for them it's a one-time thing. For you, you're hoping for renewals.
What was actually funny with the first version of this book is, you know, we self-published the first version and Audible ended up being like audio ended up being a decent percentage of our unit sales. It was like 20%.
Yeah, Audible surprises me. I mean, I never thought audiobooks would do well because I never listened to them.
Yeah, the publisher told me that it's generally like 5% or something, but it was like 20% for our book. And
I think self-help business books do well on audio.
Interesting.
Because people commuting to work.
What was interesting too is like the money we made from Audible, half of it was just bounties from affiliate. Like you automatically. Audible has a program where, like, if people sign up and just buy your book and then sign up for Audible, they give you, like, $50.
Right.
This is by default. You didn't have to sign up. And so that ended up being half of our money from Audible.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder how much. I don't know. I never broke it down with my books on that. I should take a look at that. Let's see what you've got here. Community building, which I think is really important. So for instance, for me, I've built communities around my books on Facebook, and they've done very well. And there's meetups, and this is really to offline events. I have meetups around the Choose Yourself idea, and that's done very well.
What would you say was the most driven channel for Choose Yourself? Out of
affiliate.
All of this stuff, affiliate?
Yeah, affiliate and targeting and content marketing and targeted blogs. Like I've been writing blogs about these messages for 5 years, and then I published a book on it, so I had a huge, you know, and very receptive audience.
So that was like your initial channel because it had all this pent-up demand.
Right.
And then affiliate like took you to the next level.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. And what about, you think the community?
I think also having a wall of sound approach, sort of being everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
And it's
That's
not
big for books in general.
And this is not like an insidious way. Like I believe in the message and wanted to get the word out. And so, but it just worked because if someone reads LinkedIn, they don't always read TechCrunch and vice versa. So you kind of have to be everywhere. Even if on sites that seem similar, it's people are going to choose, oh, I'm going to read this site and not this site. They're not going to, most of the time, not going to read both or everything on both.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to be everywhere.
That's why every site has the same article, news article.
That could be.
Yeah.
Well, and every newspaper has the same articles. So which worked for you the best with DuckDuckGo?
So we've been through six channels, really. In each growth phase, we had a switch because it topped out. So we started with SEO, which was a complete mistake. It just topped out immediately. I wasted months on that.
There's nothing on the beginning on your site. Like, how do you even, like, optimize?
There was at the beginning. I did all sorts of Wikipedia stuff, and I made a widget. Back in the day, like, you could make these widgets and then put a link at the bottom, and that would increase your ranking. So like I had a widget that said new search engine at the bottom, and then I got to number one on Google for new search engine. But it just wasn't a lot of people is the problem. It topped out like 10,000 searches. Then I switched to content marketing, first my blog and then microsites. And then we switched to social ads on Reddit when Reddit first started doing ads. We did kind of Reddit and 4chan ads. Then we switched to PR, print, and then TV. In the Snowden revelations, we just did a lot of all the TV spots we could find. It was driven a lot of growth.
That's great, because that probably created a lot of awareness among people who would never have had any
idea. Yeah, totally. Like we were on like Fox News and you know CNBC and all these you know random shows. And then when that topped out, we switched to business development, which were these deals with like Firefox and Safari and all sorts of other browsers you never heard of.
And did that work very well?
Yeah, it worked really well. And then it's and now we're here where we have no idea what's going to work next.
Yeah, so now 300 million searches, 1% of the market share. How are you going to get to 2% market share?
Yeah, so our target for next year is to double and you know and be at like about 8 billion searches a year. And so we'll get close to 4 this year, and we'll probably get an extra 1 next year just by kind of organic growth, you know? Mm-hmm. So we need to find an extra 3 billion searches next year through one of these channels.
Do people search as much anymore? I mean, that's
like
a stupid question.
Yeah, they know, like, they do. They do.
But I sort of feel like there's now I know everything I need.
Yes.
You know, I don't know like when Charlemagne was born, but I do know like how to order food online, you know, so I'll just go straight to that site as opposed to using Google.
You are right that people are changing their search habits, and especially on mobile, they're going directly to apps, right? So you'll go to Yelp on your phone or something.
Right.
And
in fact, the web is sort of like, I don't want to say the web is dead, but the web is transforming because we're moving into this mobile area now.
It's transforming, and in particular, it's unclear where it's transforming. So like Facebook is betting that it's going to transform into Messenger, you know, and you're just going to do everything in Facebook Messenger. Nevertheless, all of this, desktop searches are still increasing.
So another question is, what about doing something that no search engine does at all, which is deep linking into mobile apps?
Well, they're starting to do it now.
Like, why don't you hook up with a company like Bitly, which is really good at deep linking? Like, they know everything inside the apps.
Yeah.
And include that their information in your search engine.
Yeah. No, we do stuff like that. Mobile is really challenging for us because on Android, we can't, you know, we can't get access to be a default player because Google won't add us. And then on iOS, you know, we can be the default search, but like we can't otherwise get people to download our app and do like more interesting things.
But that's why a company like Bitly, which is hired by the app developers themselves to create links, you know, shorten links based on that look like web links but are actually dealing with the mobile internet, they could be interesting.
iOS.
I'm not trying to push them, by the way, just full disclosure.
I am
a small investor in them. So,
I like Bitly.
Yeah.
iOS is kind of incorporating those things anyway. Like you can now click on links and they'll automatically open in other apps.
Right.
No matter.
But can you search them? Can your crawler search them?
You can't search them as easily. So that's something we could do. Although that's what Apple is doing for iOS 9. Like app developers can now tell them what to search and they'll put it in Spotlight.
Okay, interesting. So what else on this book? What have I missed? I think I hit all your points. Have you been happy with how the book's been doing? How did it go from self-published to now you have like a real publisher? And I didn't even remember I gave you a blurb. I'm a blurb on the back.
Yes,
I was like going through the book. So Portfolio Penguin, you're dealing with Adrian Zakheim?
I am dealing with
Will Weiser?
Eric Nelson.
Okay. I published a book with them in 2008.
I think he's relatively new. He's been great. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've
Did
no
they
experience.
Approach you?
You have a lot of experience with this. This is my one time of doing this. You know?
So the experience I've had of going from self-publishing to publish is that the publisher wants you to take down your book for a while.
Yes. Yeah,
did they ask you to do that?
Yeah, they did.
And how long did you take your book down?
2 months.
Well, that's a long time. Were you scared when you took it down? Like that people were going to forget about you?
A bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think they did a little bit. Mm-hmm.
But now this is really nicely done. I like this new book.
Yeah, it's I would say that the reason why I wanted to do it was to make a much higher quality product.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it came out that way. Not just physically, but like they helped re-edit it and make it nicer.
I actually think someone can take this book. they can start their own business on helping people market. Like, if you become an expert in all these different areas, you can actually create a business
you can do
in marketing.
We could build a consulting practice on the back of this, or anyone could, really. Yeah,
right.
It's no interest to me, but people could definitely do it.
Yeah, there's value there. So what's next for you? You're going to write another book?
I am not writing another book. This was
It's hard writing a book, right? You have to kind of send your family away and, like,
I started working this in 2009. You've
That's
written
incredible.
A ton of books. I was doing this company. Like, I didn't realize how much work it was.
Yeah,
how much
awful.
Editing it was. It's crazy.
Just sitting and, like, writing these squiggly lines, you know?
I have idea. I like books. I like writing because I feel it makes a unique impact. Like, you could do something that you can say things no one else is going to say. And I have a couple ideas in there, but I don't know if I'm going to pursue it anytime in the future.
Well, Gabriel, thanks so much for coming on again. I am a user of DuckDuckGo,
nice.
And I think we might as well fight the power, which DuckDuckGo does very well. And I think this is for anybody starting any kind of business, whether it's a new search engine or selling cooking supplies or selling information. Absolutely, I agree with, like, all of these points in here. You should definitely get this book and study it. And like Gabriel was suggesting, just master the four or five areas you use the most. And I think it would be an excellent addition to any business. So thanks for writing this, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
For more from James, check out the James Altucher Show on the Stansberry Radio Network at stansberryradio.com and get yourself on the free insiders list today.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.